From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this special edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. I'm Phil Marriage, and our presentation this evening is a perfect example of why we do this program format. Over the last 13 years, I've mentioned at the beginning of each of our programs that this is the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought. And we remain the only one that's like that. The purpose for the archive we keep is to be able to go back in time and listen to what our perspectives were and whether or not there have been any changes in our attitudes or our expectations from the generations. Just as our nation was riveted to the television during the O.J. Simpson trial, we've just experienced a very similar situation during the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman trial. Race relations between the blacks and whites has always been a tender subject, one we often tend to under-examine. Our second program, which aired in May 13 years ago, was Race Relations, the African-American Perspective. We followed that one with the white perspective. Our youngest guest for the program was 16 at the time, and she's now 29, Natalie Maddox. Attorney Ernest Brown spoke from the middle generation, and our special guest was Dr. Terrence Roberts, one of the Little Rock Nine. As you listen to the discussion this evening, try to remember that these were very relevant thoughts at the time, thoughts carefully considered as generally held by each of the groups. You'll hear references to events of that year, events not unlike those ones we recently had in Florida. Cincinnati had just had an unarmed black teenager shot by police. He was the 15th black male to have been shot by police over the previous 6 years. What followed there was a period of serious analysis of racial profiling. The other reference is to the Mississippi voters keeping a Confederate flag as part of their emblem. Ask yourself as you listen, have we changed at all? Do we see these issues through different eyes now as we have just finished this trial, or have we remained stagnant or even reversed or hardened our generational perspectives? In any case, I hope you enjoy this, our second program, which was taped 13 years ago. I've posted this program on the KUAR site under our program page, and it's also on iTunes. Here then is program number 2, Race Relations, the African-American Perspective, taped back in 2001.
2001, the beginning of a new millennium, a time when hope is renewed that the racial hatreds that plagued the last millennium would have been overcome by now. However, with the very recent events in Cincinnati with the unarmed black man who was shot by the police, and in Mississippi where there was the recent election over the Confederate flag, it's very apparent that we may have been desensitized to problems that have never been fully solved. Tonight we will focus our discussion between the generations on race relations from the African-American perspective. My guests tonight are Dr. Terrence Roberts, who's joining us from Pasadena, California, Ernest Brown from Pine Bluff, and Natalie Maddox. I'd like to begin by introducing Dr. Terrence J. Roberts, who's out in Pasadena. Good evening, Dr. Roberts.
Good evening.
Dr. Roberts is a clinical psychologist in Pasadena. He's certified and licensed as a psychologist and social worker in California. And since July of 1998, he is helping Little Rock comply with the federal court order desegregation of the Little Rock School District.
That's right.
And most recently, he received the Congressional Gold Medal in 1999, which was presented by the United States Congress for his contributions in the area of civil rights. And I'd like to begin by asking you if you could share with us what you believe your generation's impact has had on the race relations, representing the older generations tonight.
Great. I'll be glad to. I think one of the things we have to think about from the start is that when I was born in 1941, this country was operating under a constitutional edict that it was indeed constitutional to discriminate. The Supreme Court had ruled in 1896 in the Plessy versus Ferguson decision that it was constitutional, legal, ethical, moral, socially appropriate, and highly desirable to discriminate. And that discrimination was based on skin color. So when I was a young man growing up there in Little Rock, I did not enjoy the privilege of being fully invested in this society, not because I didn't want to be, but because I wasn't allowed to be. And that, as a backdrop, is very, very important, because it hasn't been that long ago. That changed legally in 1954, but it's significant to note the change in terms of the legal emphasis as opposed to the social emphasis. Because in the wake of the Brown decision, there was a loud outcry, and many people weren't all that happy with it. In fact, the historians write about it as massive resistance, because many people joined together and said, under no circumstance will we allow this Supreme Court decision to take precedence over the Plessy decision. We want segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And that echo is still heard. We heard bits and pieces of it most recently from Mississippi in the referendum over the Confederate flag. And that's just a small piece of what we keep hearing around us. My generation had to deal with that. We were thrown into it and immersed in it. And we joined the forces that were already in operation. And by that I mean we didn't invent the civil rights movement. It was well underway when we arrived, and it has continued to date. But I think we were more focused and perhaps more motivated simply because of the extremely oppressive conditions we lived under. It was atrocious, to put it mildly, to live in a society where you could walk down the streets and see signs on public restrooms that read, men, women, colored. Not even the distinction of gender among people of color. That was psychologically horrifying. And socially, it meant that we were continuing to be locked out, didn't have a part to play. And in any society, if you feel like you are not really a part of the central action, you lose hope. You lose hope very quickly. And so I think that gave rise to an urgency to move things along very quickly. And I think what we have seen over the past few years, let's say from the 50s onward, is a lot of change which I consider to be rather cosmetic. Oh, I can walk into stores now and try on clothing. I can sit at lunch counters and do this sort of thing. But I still find many, many doors closed. I find doors to the corporate boardrooms, doors to the seats of finance and political power, virtually closed. Open a bit in the sense that you will see faces of color peeking through now and then, but nothing like what I would expect to have happened. So I think our generation, or my generation, has been very, very fortunate in one sense in that we have had the opportunity to fight, because that's not always a given in an oppressive society. I think it was simply a confluence of events. The time was right, that there were forces, social forces, legal forces, all coming together at one time. And I don't think it was simply because of our generation and the choice that we made. I think we just happened to be on the scene when these forces were amalgamated. I think the leadership had always been there. As you look at history, you'll find evidence of people forcing the issue through the courts. Even slaves, when you read the slave narratives, you find that that group of people were adamant in trying to force the courts to grant them full citizenship. They were rebuffed at every turn, but that fight continued.
Dr. Roberts, as you look at the current status of race relations, how do you look at the generations right now in the middle of this?
Well, I think, unfortunately, as a people, across generations, we have not yet confronted the issue head on. We have done a few things around the periphery, but we have never really mustered the will or the commitment to take this thing on full scale. So we have pulled out all the stops for national defense. But when it comes to race relations, we're hesitant.
So are you saying that what started in your early part of your life is now, as you see it, sort of at a crawl?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A crawl, if it is in fact crawling.
Now, I next want to introduce to everybody Ernest Brown. He's representing the middle generations, and that's kind of a hard, vague area to talk about right there. He's an attorney with Cross, Kearney, and McKissick out of Pine Bluff. He's the president of the Pine Bluff branch of the NAACP, and he serves on the board for leadership in Pine Bluff, and he's also the past secretary for the Democratic Party in Arkansas. Ernest Brown, your generation was among the first to follow those civil rights era battles into the real world, and race relations for your generation has taken on a whole new meaning. What do you think is the current real status of race relations from your generation's point of view?
Well, first, let me say good evening to you, Phil, and to the listeners. It's a great privilege and honor to be here this evening. And as I think about that question, I'm reminded of a quote by Frederick Douglass, who said, during the whole history of the progress of human liberty, it shows that all concessions yet made to her august chains have been born of earnest struggle. if there is no struggle, there is no progress. And as I look at the current state of race relations, at least for this middle generation, there's a feeling sometimes that the struggle is over, that we've somehow overcome. And I would say on a positive note that African Americans have made significant gains. You see more African Americans in certain fields that were once only related to one race. However, you see more instances of driving while black, where African Americans are targeted in that situation, shopping while black. And we've seen some evidence of that here recently. More segregation in the schools, where you see the white flight with more of the public schools becoming predominantly African American. So from that perspective, I do agree with Dr. Roberts that to a certain degree, it has come to a crawl. You mentioned in the introduction that I'm the president of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in Pine Bluff. And one of the reasons that I'm involved with the NAACP is that I believe strongly that the struggles that Dr. Roberts and his generation went through have laid a foundation for my generation, hopefully will serve as a catalyst for Natalie's generation. And I feel like I'd be doing a disservice not to be involved and to be active in continuing that fight and making others aware, because people that forget their past are doomed to repeat it. And I think that it's very important that you're aware of what the past is and that you make plans for the future.
Ernest, as you were growing up, did those early efforts yield a better world for you that came from Dr. Roberts' generation, or were you aware of the real differences between your early years and his early years?
Most definitely. Dr. Roberts and he and my dad are only 1 year apart, so my dad and my mom both did a good job of really bringing that to bear for us. So I would definitely say I was definitely aware of the advantages that I had based on that period of time, and I was very thankful for the sacrifices made by that particular generation to give me the educational opportunities that I had, and I definitely took advantage of those. So no question about it. Like I said earlier, I think those struggles definitely laid a positive foundation for the future that present and I now have, and hopefully for the future that my son, who is now 11 months, will have.
Well, as you assess your generation compared to the earlier generation, where do you think your generation, that block in the middle, is going to find its place in history in terms of what your generation has done to advance the areas of race relations?
Well, I feel that as far as my generation goes, I think that we are, status-wise, education, you see the number of African-Americans actually graduating from high school and going on to college. Those numbers, percentage-wise, has increased. More African-Americans that are doing well as far as the medium income. So I think economically-wise, you see a lot more African-Americans moving into that middle class. So I think that is definitely a positive. In addition, I see more African-Americans moving into that the first black Secretary of State, the first black National Security Advisor, making that progress so that when now the generation comes, it won't be so new that you see a black in this particular, African-American in this particular place. So I think that our generation has somewhat picked up that ball and forged into those areas. And unfortunately, as Dr. Roberts said, it's only maybe one or two, and we haven't moved in mass numbers like we should, but we are gradually making progress in that area.
So what do you see as the future, as from your generation looking forward, what that generation group?
Well, as I look at the future from Natalie's generation's perspective, what I would like to see is when we see appointments to the Supreme Court, to various offices, to coaching position, whatever the positions be, that it not be such a surprise when someone of color or minority seeks the position. And still, there are a lot of firsts. Even after Dr. Roberts' generation, you still have a lot of firsts in this particular area. And so as I see in the future, I would see that we wouldn't have so many of those firsts. It would be something that would be more accepted and more of a custom.
I want to move on now to Natalie Maddox. And what's interesting about the situation for Natalie, and as far as I'm looking at it, is that she sits here at the age of 16, but at the same time, Dr. Roberts was 15 when the incident in Little Rock happened. And it's been interesting in my mind anyway to try and understand what was going on in his mind at 15 as compared to what is going on in Natalie's mind at 16, living in the year 2001. Natalie Maddox is 16 years old, and she's a junior at Pine Bluff High School. She's an honor student with a 3.94 GPA. And she's a member of several clubs and plays on the golf team, but I didn't ask her what her score was, and I don't think that was appropriate. And she's going to attend the attend Howard University, majoring in broadcast communications for mass media when she gets out of school. And right now she's active in the Arkansas Youth Council for the NAACP, which is how I found out about her. And Natalie, you are really representing the future, and as that, you are probably the most important person here tonight. And although the Ernest Brown and Dr. Roberts have the ability to have hindsight and look at what's going on and what happened in the past, you sit here without that luxury, and it's all out in front for you. Natalie, when you look at the situations at school right now, the thing that I've noticed in the multiracial society that we're seemingly becoming, are you noticing in school there much in the way of the mixing of the races in a multiracial area, or is it still the separation?
Well, I feel as we get closer to this, into this millennium, that we are becoming closer. In my school, as you know, most of us sit together, park beside each other, and we're growing closer to accepting it. Some people don't, but as we get older, we are.
So you're seeing more of a blending than was out there before?
Yes.
Natalie, when you're with your friends, how do you take this idea of things being fixed? Does your generation see things as everything's okay now or not?
No, everything is not fixed. You know, you go somewhere with your white friends, people look at you funny like, okay, why is she with her? Or some of your friends are stereotype you like, oh, she hanging out with the white people now. I don't think it should be like that. Everyone should learn to be friends and, I mean, stick together. We don't have to have that racial divide in the schools.
Dr. Roberts, I want to throw it back to you and ask you about the idea of everything being fixed. Has that crossed your horizon on this at all?
Well, I would agree that nothing has really been fixed. We have yet to identify what it is we're thinking of fixing, and I think we have to do that first before we can even get close to concluding that we've done anything. I think there are a number of writers and social commentators who would like very much for it to, quote, have been fixed, because I think it's too painful a subject to enter into in terms of a national dialogue. I bump into people all the time who are simply frightened of even giving voice, to what they feel inside about these things.
Natalie, do the young generations have the same passions for improved race relations as the older generations? We've heard Dr. Roberts talk about what he went through and Ernest Brown and what he went through, and I'm sure that there were passions behind a lot of the activities that went on. And I'm wondering, do you sense that your generation has passion for the areas that need to be worked on in race relations?
I feel that some people feel the need to get up and do something and some don't. Some just have that I don't care attitude anyway.
Are you needing leaders?
I think we do need leaders. Someone is always scared to step up and do something. That's why it took so long for us to get where we are now, because someone is always scared to step up. If we just realize that we can get along and come closer, then I think that something can be done.
Ernest Brown, who are the leaders that your generation is looking to now? Are they the same leaders, or is there other leaders on the horizon?
I would definitely say that there are a plethora of leaders. I mean, when you're beginning to look at our generation and it's becoming more economically and educationally advanced, I begin to think that it's not the same central, bigger-than-life leaders that you had during Dr. Roberts' generation, such as Dr. King. I think now you have more African-Americans in Congress, more African-Americans in the business world. So I think that when you talk about leaders, they can be, depending on what field you talk about, you don't have that one figure that is necessarily the spokesperson for the African-American mm-hmm. community. And I'll be honest with you, Phil, I like that, because in our community, we have diverse personalities and ideas, and when you go to other ethnic groups, there's not one person that speaks for all Hispanics or all Caucasians, and I've always have somewhat of offense when you sometimes people go and say, okay, who is the spokesperson for the community?
Dr. Roberts, how do you see the area of leadership?
I'm not certain that that's a necessary focus. I'd like to promote the idea of individuals taking charge and developing a sense of executive responsibility for social change and not looking to leaders per se, because I think that is problematic. But I think if individuals would take on that responsibility, we would see ferment in a lot of areas, and we would see initiatives being taken at the grassroots level and wherever people find themselves.
A lot of the progress that has been made or can be made is at a plateau, has reached a level that, you know, no point in really trying as much anymore for that. It's just we're here, we need to live in society and accept the current circumstances. And
Natalie, how'd that strike you?
Our generation does care, and we should care because we play a big role in the future. And you're not just going to deal with your race all your life. You have to learn to get along with everybody.
Well, I don't think you can do anything else other than accept the reality of the state of existence. It doesn't mean that that's condoned, certainly, but accepting it is it's hard not to accept it because that's the reality. I think perhaps it's important for people to take the challenge to figure out the why of the way things are, to educate self about the historical background so that there's a greater understanding of why things are in the state they're in.
Back in February, I picked out a couple of things out of the same paper on the same day, February 25th, that really kind of got me going. One of them here, the headline on it, is from the Associated Press. It's Florida's Blacks and Whites Live with Consensual Segregation. I want to just highlight a couple of things about this. This is about a fellow by the name of Gerald Walker, who works less than a mile from an oyster bar in Florida, but he's never been in there. He says it's just that as a black man, he's not interested in eating in a white establishment. And he says that nobody seems to mind. The idea of consensual segregation is one that I'd kind of like to toss out to you guys for your comments, because it seems like that apparently in Florida, we still have segregation that is accepted by both the white and the black races.
Actually, it doesn't sound that way to me. I think that term consensual is actually not accurate, especially based on that last tidbit you shared about the proprietor saying to the black customer that you have to go into the back. That doesn't sound so consensual to me. I think it's common, and even without that article, I know this to be a fact. And it's a product not because people are agreeing that this is the way they want it to be, but because the oppression is so present and the mindset so intransigent, it's sometimes very difficult to maintain the high-level energy necessary to keep pushing against that. There's almost a resignation in that, not a consenting.
Ernest Brown, what do you think?
I would say that when he says resignation, it's almost like, you know, I have to worry about just my survival and not really worry about the effect of changing necessary to circumstances that are around me as far as that goes. When we talk about acceptance or those type of dynamics, in some folks' mind, African-Americans are more likely to, when you talk about stops and that racial profile, and I mean, maybe it was accepted that we were stopped more and that was dealt with, but until the situation really full-blown in New Jersey, where we found that to be just troublesome for us just to be stopped out and profiled, I think sometime accepting the reality is, what is our reality? Do we make it what it is that exists, or do we try to change our reality into something that's better? But I think in that particular situation, I would agree that there has been some of the resignation that African-Americans go to these restaurants and whites go to that restaurant, and until somehow the reality and the perception changes, I think that likely will occur, and I think it's not only occurring there in Perry, Florida, but in other places.
Natalie, you're shaking your head sort of yes. Is that, do you kind of agree with that, that that's going on?
Yes, I do. So when you have parties or you go somewhere, you just see your friends, and then they're like, oh, I have black friends, but I'll hang out with them, but I wouldn't go to a party with them. They come over my house, but I just wouldn't go to their party or go there with them. It shouldn't be like that. If they're your friend, you should be willing to go anywhere with them.
And so you're saying that you don't mix much outside of school?
I feel that me and my white friends do mix out of school. When I go to the party, I see them there. It's like, I feel we do mix.
And Dr. Roberts, let me ask you about that in terms of the older generation. Have you seen a mixing of the generations as you've aged in this or not?
Well, what I've seen and continue to see is that we as a people across lines of color, race, and ethnicity tend to live in something I call a pseudo-community. There's a thin veneer of civility where we're polite and we don't fight each other. But there is no real connection that crosses these lines. There are some people who grow beyond it and are able to live in this society without giving credence to these lines of separation, but the vast majority of people pay attention to the lines. They really do.
On that note, we talk about integration through the week, but on Sundays is the most segregated day of the week, and until we can cross some of those lines, I mean, we're really just, in a sense, fantasizing. Sure, I have some friends that I maintain contact with. They're very close to me that I went to college with, but you still have somehow being able to cross that line on Sunday, and we worship the same God, but getting past that fellowship or that socialization to that level is still, at least for my generation, I can't speak for Dr. Roberts, even Nally, but getting to that point has still been a struggle.
We're going to continue to read those articles until we as a people, and that's across lines of color, et cetera, until we decide that this is an issue of such importance that we want to change it. We really haven't yet done that.
Ernest, is there an alternative to affirmative action that we can all embrace?
One part of affirmative action is that they say, we don't need that. Maybe a dad or a grandfather was prejudiced, but we're not. We're going to be fair. We're not going to look at that along those lines. But you still see companies where African Americans reach a glass ceiling. So I think there's still a need for, as I stated earlier, for affirmative action, for those programs to bring African Americans up to the level. I mean, you're not going to get equal after just 30, 35 years. So to be honest with you, I don't think there's a realistic alternative to affirmative action right now.
See, to my mind, affirmative action is any procedures put in place to affirm or give messages to a group of people that they count. And in this country, we've had affirmative action programs in place since its inception, but they were primarily and solely for white males. We have in this country an affirmative action program that has succeeded beyond measure, and it has made it possible for white males to excel and exceed in every sphere of our existence. Now, I'd say, rather than look for alternatives to affirmative action, what we should be talking about is whether or not we want to extend affirmative action to include people other than white males. That's how I would see it.
I think it's, to be honest, I think it's a lack of understanding and acceptance that's still dividing us, perceived stereotypes. I mean, I think that's a big key as far as that goes. I mean, all African-American males like this or all African-American females like that, whenever you get in your mind that a certain group is like that, that's kind of a big divide field to get past. And I think that's really something that's still dividing us. If that was not the case, you would not continue to see the immense incidence of racial profiling.
Ernest, what's your feeling about the future for race relations?
I am very positive about the future. I mean, there's no question about it that we have some struggles right now. We've had some struggles, but I think the future is definitely positive. I believe that these firsts that we're having now with Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and others who are still, you know, like I say, still we're having these firsts will be a positive impact for our future generation.
Dr. Roberts, any final comments from you?
Yes, I think that as we consider these issues, we've got to understand and realize that this country was founded upon and still nurtures a spirit of racism, an ideology that is very pernicious and very present. And for some reason, we won't let it go. And I think that's the next frontier for us in this generation.
I hope you've enjoyed this reflective look back some 13 years ago. Our topic was race relations, the African-American perspective. Having this resource of comparative thought is essential to our being able to sense changes, even small changes, as our generations evolve. This program is posted on our station website at KUAR.org. Tune in next week for an all-new topic. Thanks for listening this evening, and we'll see you next week. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.